Hi, friends. I'm Scott Hanselman, and I'm going to do a lap around Azure. This is kind of Azure for developers. I'm a developer. I'm not really a marketing person, so you'll have to forgive me if it's not as polished as some other presentations, but this is Azure from my perspective. And Azure can be overwhelming sometimes. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of stuff going on. Here's a pretty impressive looking slide with a lot of really great iconography, including this elephant, which you don't see in a lot of slides. There's a lot of moving parts. But for the most part, Azure is very logically layered and well laid out. So rather than thinking about this, which is a very complete view of Azure, we're going to look at a simplified view of Azure, my view of Azure. This is just me, again, and I'm going to even simplify this even more. But what I want to show is a sense of how pieces layer and work with each other. So for example, here we've got Azure Storage, and then Virtual Machine sits on top of that. And I'm going to walk kind of from the bottom up. So even simpler than this, we're going to look at it like this. And I'll go through the portal, and we'll kind of get a general sense of what a developer needs to know when it comes to Azure. So I'm going to step away from these slides for just a second, and we'll spend a little time in the portal, and then we'll come back to these slides. All right. So here I am in the Azure portal. And this is kind of like the start menu in Windows. You've got these tiles, and you can click Customize, and you can move these around and resize them however you like. This is very much your dashboard into Azure. Now, we've made a couple of changes in this portal. Initially, some people thought it was a little bit confusing. In fact, I found it a little confusing. Fortunately, now you've got a search box right up at the top here called Search Resources. But the best feature, and the part that has me most excited, is if you click on Browse on the left-hand side here, you can star the pieces of Azure that you're the most interested in. So for us, I'm going to use Storage, Web Apps, Virtual Machines. Again, though, search box everywhere. So let's go and type in Web, and then hit the star. And then I'll hit Virtual Machines. Oops, I missed the star. I'm going to hit Virtual Machines. And I'll hit that star. And then I also want to talk about storage accounts and things like that. So I can see the breadth of what Azure has to offer. Lots of great stuff. I think I might put in the CDN in there as well. What else do we have? The things that I'm going to use kind of on a day-to-day basis. I might mark help as well. And I think I also have an API app. And we'll learn about what each one of these is. Once I've picked the pieces that I care about, I can then worry about those individually. Let's jump back to the slide here, and let's talk about Azure Storage. Okay, that's the bottom part of this. This took me a little bit of time to get my head around the idea of what is Azure Storage. And then they just said, well, it's just bytes in the cloud. You just throw some bytes in the cloud, and then you can serve them from somewhere. In fact, I use an application called CloudBerry Explorer. But inside of here, I'm going to go and go to the storage resource, click on Hansel Minute CDN. You can see all my different storage accounts. And storage accounts have containers. Now, why am I telling you this? Well, while that's loading up, I'm going to show you my podcast website. So my podcast website runs in Azure. It's something that I do every week. And if I click in the archive section of the podcast, you'll see a whole bunch of faces. Okay, these are the faces of the guests that I have on my podcast. And I thought it would be a good idea to store these in Azure Storage and have them be served. So I use this application called CloudBerry Explorer, and I copy and paste my JPEGs up into storage. So if we come over here into the Azure portal, and I click on images, we'll go and load up all of these different images. Now, they're done by show name. So if we look at one of these pictures and take a look at it, it is going to be, as I recall, images, there we go, images.hanselminute/images, then 492.jpg. And we can go back over into Azure, and then here they are. See, I've just dropped those JPEGs into Azure Storage. So at the simplest level, you can click on one of those and get all the information about them. And you see how these blades continue to open inside of the Azure portal. We went from all resources into the CDN, into the blob service, into the images, and now we're on a particular image. I can open these up, like maximize them and minimize them. And in a moment, we're going to get the metadata information about image number 159. And I can go and access that directly within HTTP. Now, things in storage can be public or private. I can have things that are stored that are not visible to the public. I explicitly wanted things to be available to the public with my my images. And they can also be done as page or block. So basically, do I want to just serve these over the wire, forward only once, just pick up that those bytes and send them out on the wire? Or do I want to be able to seek around in them, meaning not just go forward, but go forward and backward? That's where how Azure Works started to click for me. By that, I mean, I realized that, oh, JPEGs that are stored in Azure are the same as disks that are stored in Azure. In fact, virtual machines sit on top of Azure storage, and those VHDs, those virtual hard drives, are mounted by the Azure virtual machine, or IaaS, infrastructure as a service aspects of Azure. And that was really interesting to me. So that meant I could go into Windows itself here, and I'm going to right click and say computer management. Okay. And I'll go to disk management. This is inside of my local Windows machine. And a lot of people don't realize that, did you know that you can come up here into Action and say, create VHD? Now, this doesn't have anything to do with virtual machines. I'm just trying to give you some low-level concepts as we build up into a larger understanding of how Azure works. When I say create VHD, I can make a virtual hard disk. I could make one that was maybe 5 gigabytes and call it foo.vhd. And then I could copy that up into Azure. Format it however I want, format it as NTFS or FAT32, copy it up into Azure, and then mount that inside of a virtual machine. And that series of bytes is treated no differently than those JPEGs that I use for the back end for my podcast. So I could go and click on storage accounts within the portal here and go and find some of my VHDs. Click on containers here. You see how it's just moving those blades back and forth. In fact, I can use my fingers. You see my finger there using touch, scroll backwards and forwards. Here's VHDs. And then see the blobs within there. See if we can, there they are. So here is a little 25 meg VHD that I made just as an illustrative thing earlier. I just made a little 25 meg VHD and threw that up there. And that's sitting next to things like this. Here's a data disk that's 5 gigabytes. And those could be sitting next to large, you know, larger C drives. You see all these drives here are the drives for my virtual machines. This was really useful for me to understand, because once I accidentally deleted a virtual machine and I was freaking out, I thought I'd lost all my data. And then I realized what I had deleted was the configuration that represented that virtual machine, but the disks were something separate. That's why in the Azure portal, when you hit delete, you have to explicitly say, and also delete all attached disks. So chances are you can just grab a disk and start another virtual machine and then mount that as well. The other thing that was interesting as a reminder to myself was that this is kind of like Hyper-V in the cloud. Virtual disks that are running on my local Hyper-V installation could be moved into Azure. Sometimes you'll hear people refer to that as lift and shift. That's when you've got, the Hyper-V system, the virtual machine that's running under Anna's desk, and you go, man, you know, Anna's got a really important system running under her desk. We should probably move that into the cloud. Take that VHD, move it up into Azure, mount it, and run. So let's talk about how virtual machines live. We've got Azure storage, and then virtual machines that sit on top of that. Now, I decided that I wanted to go and learn about how virtual machines work. And the best way to learn about something in Azure is just to find a problem in your life and do it. So whether that's your child's little league, you want to make a website, that's a good thing to go and learn Azure. Use that free trial, that couple $100 that you get in free Azure time when you sign up, and go and make a website for your church, or make a VM that you can run some of the applications in your company on. My problem was I wanted to make a newsletter. So I have this newsletter at hanselman.com/newsletter. And I wanted to run a little PHP application that would then, you know, send people's information out, you know, once a month or whenever I do this newsletter. The application was a PHP application, and it used MySQL. And I didn't know either of those things, but I wanted to learn about them. But I also wanted to learn about virtual machines at the same time. So what I did is I made a little virtual machine here using the application that I send my email with, which is called Sendy. Sendy is the little PHP app. So here's Hanselman Sendy. It's a little VHD, a little VM. And then I've got Hanselman MySQL. Now, in this case, I was just learning, so I ended up making two VMs. Maybe I didn't need to make two VMs, but I did anyway. If I click on Hanselman MySQL, we'll take a look at this virtual machine. You can see where it's running. You can see how hard it's working or not. My newsletter does not require a lot of effort. You can see a little disk right there, a little CPU percentage. And then really interesting, you can see how much that's costing me. So right now it's cost me 76 cents. So it's not been working too hard. This is a small virtual machine that I'm using. In fact, we can go and look at information. And the only place that you can see that it's running Windows is this little comment that says Windows. This is another thing that makes me happy about Azure. It's not going out of its way to say, this is a Windows VM and this is a Linux VM. A virtual machine is a virtual machine. Compute is compute. So Linux VMs aren't treated any differently than Windows VMs are in Azure, which makes me happy. You see here where it says size. This is using a shared core, basically a quarter of a processor, and it has a very little amount of memory. So it's not that big of a deal. This is a Windows virtual machine, which means that I can click Connect, and it's going to download this RDP file, this remote desktop file. So I'm going to remote into my Windows machine. And let's see if I can remember my password. This Windows machine is running MySQL for Windows, and it is running it for no other reason that I couldn't remember how to set up MySQL on Linux. But again, I'm just learning at this point, right? So I'm going to remote into that. So I'm literally remoted into my virtual machine running in the cloud here, but it's a really small one. Remember I mentioned that. So it's quite inexpensive, and the performance is fine for what I'm doing because it's just running one application. But one of the things that I noticed immediately because I'm running a database is it was a little bit slow. I was kind of a little disappointed in the performance there. So I learned about this thing called IOPS, input, output, operations per second. It's kind of a thing that you learn about on the net when you think about the cloud. You'll hear a number like, well, this supports 300 IOPS or this supports 500 IOPS. It's just a measurement that says how much throughput you can get through this disk. So you get, I think, on a small Azure virtual machine, something like 300 IOPS. And we can actually go out there and Google with Bing to find out Azure disk IOPS. IOPS. See, there you go. IOPS planning. And you can go up and find on the Azure.com website exactly how many IOPS you get. There we go. Here's a great TechNet article that talks about that stuff. And we can see, you can also go up into the Azure calculator and find out those things as well. So I've got this C drive, and I realized that what my problem was is I put the Windows installation, which came when I made the virtual machine, and the disk on the same drive. So I got 300 IOPS on this tiny little machine on the same drive. And I was like, well, that means that Windows and the database are competing. But you know, my buddy Corey, he is obsessive about this. Whenever he gets a new machine, he makes that D drive just D for data. He always says that, D for data. With a virtual machine in Azure, you get free additional attached disks, and those disks have the same amount of IOPS. So this is free performance. You take a tiny little VM, you add a disk, you get 300 more IOPS, you've doubled your IOPS. That means your C drive is dedicated to Windows and your D drive is dedicated to data. So I went and I put my MySQL data over on another disk. This was really, really easy to do. You can see the disk right there. In fact, you can see that that disk is only 5 gigs. That's because I decided to make it 5 gigs. Didn't have to be. If we go back over into this portal and then click on disks, over here on disks, you can see there's the C drive, the OS disk, and then there's the data disk with 5 gigs. Now, if I tried to say attach new or make another disk, maximum number of disks already attached. That's because this is a tiny, tiny, tiny virtual machine. This is the smallest virtual machine that Azure offers. Well, here's the part that's interesting. You make a slightly larger virtual machine. Not only do you get more perf, you get more memory, you get more processor, you get more disks. What if you made a giant, super huge, Godzilla-sized virtual machine? You get like 16 or 32 or some huge number of striped disks. Then you can start doing partitioning of your work. Let's say that someone gave you terabytes of JPEGs and they wanted you to take those JPEGs and OCR them and put them into a PDF, massive amount of work. You know, you could write a for loop and you could say for each JPEG and all the JPEGs and spin through this synchronously. But then you might discover that you are not CPU bound, but disk bound. Your disks can only move so fast. But if you had 16 of them, you could chop that up kind of Yellow Pages style. And by Yellow Pages style, I mean the name here is A through L, and that's in this Yellow Pages. And then they're M through Z, and that's in these Yellow Pages. You could say the first 100,000 go on this disk, and the second 100,000 go on that disk. All of that is just priced at the same way that storage is priced, which is really nothing. Because the virtual machine size dictates how many of those disks you can have, you really got to think about that when you move to the cloud. So step one, lift and shift. Pick up the VHD and move it into the cloud. But then when you discover that you have disk-intensive workload, you've got I/O happening on your virtual machines, why not think about adding a disk, moving that over there? Here's another little tip for you, though, that I discovered. There's also a third disk. Even tiny, tiny virtual machines have a third disk, but it's temporary storage. This is where you want to point your temp environment variable at. That's going to be wiped. If you reboot this virtual machine, that disk goes away. So you don't want to put anything important on that. You can see that that's partially full. So my data is here. Now, the last thing that you want to think about when you're thinking about virtual machines is really, really important, is caching. The OS disk I've got set to read-write caching. You can see that that runs Windows. There's that location. Now, even though this says HTTP, I can't access my disk from the browser. I can't download that because it's private. Okay? If I click on data disks, I want to make sure that I don't have any issues at all with caching interfering with my database. So I've turned caching off entirely on just on that one disk. You get to decide. You get to control it. You can go and attach existing disks. You can attach new disks. You've got a lot of flexibility. So when I learned about that, when I learned how virtual machines sit on top of Azure storage, that started getting me thinking about how this stuff fits together. Now, this was a Windows machine. You can see that. I'm just going to close that and not listen to it anymore. And let's look at the other side of that, the PHP application. That one is in Hanselman Sendi. That one is on a Linux virtual machine. And I also want to point out that this is really my actual account. This is my Hanselman.com personal account. I don't really do demos with a free Azure account. And the reason that I do that is, I think, really important. If someone is showing you how to use Azure and they don't actually have to pay for it, they might use it differently than you would, right? If the Microsoft employee has unlimited Azure time — we don't get unlimited Azure time, by the way — then they might say, yes, use a large virtual machine and go to sleep. We won't charge you when you wake up in the morning. I want to use just what I need. I think about density. So for example, again, I'm using a small virtual machine. I thought I needed a medium, but it turns out it's just one application that's running in this particular virtual machine. So I want to use the smallest possible virtual machine that's going to give me the performance that I want. Fortunately, I can come into the Azure portal here and I can see the CPU percentage. I can see the memory usage. I'll talk a little bit about that later when we talk about app service plans. But the idea here being that you want to use the smallest thing that will give you the perf that you want. And remember that you can always scale it up later. Now, this particular machine here, Hanselman Sendi, is a Linux machine. So I've had to open up some endpoints. Virtual machines have endpoints. I've got an SSH endpoint at this location. So I'm basically mapping that port to the private port that we use for SSH, which is port 22. So that means that I should be able to come out to the command line here, or the DOS prompt, as I like to call it, because I'm old. And I'll say SSH Scott Hanselman Sendi dot cloudapp.net colon control V, because I'm running Windows 10, which is awesome. Sorry. We've done so much cool stuff. And then I've even got word wrap. It's funny, I'll do an entire hour on Azure, and then people who are still awake will start to squeal when they see that, you know, you've got word wrap, and then I can hit Alt Enter and go like that. So SSH password, think this is the password. Dun, dun, dun. So I'm shushing into this machine. I'm trying to get that to catch on. No one's saying that yet. But please start saying, I'm just going to shush into that computer. So here I'm running Ubuntu, and I can go and hit top and see how hard this machine's working. See, the machine is not working very hard. Let's go and hit, I think it is sendy.hanselman.com. There we go. See, www just popped in. CPU started working. This machine is starting to actually do some work. There it goes again. So you can see the web server is working on this. Again, pointing out the CPU percentages. Let's take a look at this. This is not working that hard. How much memory is free? Look, I've got 3/4 of a gig on a tiny, tiny VM. I'm not even using 2/3 of it. So I'm really happy with the balance that I'm getting with a small VM, a small amount of memory, and perf. Best part here is, how often do I send newsletters? Well, I send them maybe once a month or once every other month, which means that I keep this small until I need to scale it up. So I'll take this up to a medium, do a quick reboot, and I'll be back with a medium with a lot more memory and a lot more CPU. I will send out my newsletters, I'll do my reporting, and then when that day is done, it comes back down. So I'm paying for an extra small over the course of the month, and I pay for a medium or a large for a day or two. And that's kind of the promise of the cloud and what's so nice about this. And it also keeps me from breaking the bank. And actually, top is not nice. I should be running HTOP. HTOP was a lot better. Cool. So good news and bad news. Things that I don't like about running virtual machines is that you have to maintain them. You have to kind of keep them alive. They're like a puppy. You know, it's super fun when you get a puppy, but then there's this thing that keeps wanting to be watered or whatever. I don't have any puppies, but I presume that you have to water them at some point. I'll borrow a puppy if I want a puppy. And by this, I mean that I have to go in and run Windows Update and run apt-get upgrade and apt-get update. And that means maintenance. Virtual machines have to be maintained. When the Heartbleed thing came out, I think it was an SSL bug, right? And we all freaked out. I woke up at 2 in the morning and I shushed into this machine and I ran apt-get upgrade and apt-get, and I got that machine up to date. But my Azure web apps were automatically patched and I didn't have to do anything. So that's the kind of balance that we're going to be talking about, the difference between control, absolute control over a virtual machine that I own and I care about, but I also have to maintain, and a puppy that I can borrow, which I kind of prefer the latter. So virtual machines give you absolute power. You can do anything you want to them. You can run any code that you want to them, but you manage the operating system and you manage the apps. So you're responsible. In a moment, we're going to start talking about websites and how those work. You can run a little bit less. You can't run everything on a website and get support, but Azure will manage those updates. Okay, so things are a little bit different. One other thing that I wanted to point out, of course, is the ability to make farms of websites. So if I go back to my virtual machines, you'll notice that I've got a Linux web farm that I've put up here. Hanselman Linux Farm 1, 2, and 3. They are all inside of what's called a cloud service. So if we go back over to all resources and look at my Hanselman Linux, I think it was called Linux. What I've done is I've linked all of these together and then load balanced on port 80. Okay, so if we go and hit this, I'm going to hit test.php. You can see the IP address of the machine that I'm hitting. But if I hit refresh, you notice that I'm bouncing between different machines. I've actually got 3 machines in there. I need to update one of them to show the IP address. So as I hit refresh, as I hit F5, you're seeing me go between 3 virtual machines. I can pull one out of the cluster if I wanted to and then load balance between them. The load balancing is free. It's all part of the service. But again, I'm still managing virtual machines on my own. And that's fine, and it works for the things that I'm doing, like running my little newsletter, but sometimes you want to up-level things and think about it from a higher level. So websites are that next level, that platform as a service. This is infrastructure as a service, and this is platform as a service. Now, there is a middle ground, though. A lot of people, when they first started using Azure, used a thing called cloud apps. These are stateless virtual machines. They are virtual machines, but they can come and go as they please. That means that they might reboot at any moment. Azure's managing the operating system, but you have total power. So that's a nice matrix there where you can decide power versus maintainability and manageability. Some people like to live at the top there. Another way to look at this is, oh, by the way, here's another reminder. There's a new game in town that you'll hear more and more about. There's stateless VMs in the form of cloud apps, but there's also stateless microservices in the service fabric. And the service fabric, in fact, is one of the things that makes all of Azure work. So it doesn't actually technically sit in between these two like a sandwich. It's kind of more like this, and it's all these little stateless services. And it's another way to make large scalable systems. It's beyond the scope of my talk, but it's definitely something you're going to want to check out. And there's going to be videos on Azure Friday at friday.azure.com, as well as other videos on Channel 9 that you can find. Okay, so here's how I look at things. Virtual machines are kind of like your first house, right? You have to maintain it. Someone's got to climb on top of that house and clean out the gutter. But platform as a service or web apps, that is like a hotel. You can basically trash the hotel room and someone's going to maintain it for you and you're a rock star and it's awesome. Use the room, destroy the room, we will put it back afterwards. And then those middle ground ones are a little more like renting a room in someone else's house. And things get a little bit more complicated. Let's go and see what web apps look like and then compare those to virtual machines. So back in the portal here, I'm going to say new. Here I can say compute if I wanted to, and I can pick things like Ubuntu virtual machines or Dynamics. There's a whole marketplace full of stuff. In fact, if I wanted to make a Minecraft server for my kids, I could click on marketplace, and then it's going to load this huge list of all of these different virtual machines, and I'll say Minecraft, and there's two different Minecraft servers, including a recommended one from Microsoft, already pre-configured. That's a nice little way to learn about Azure. But I don't want to do compute. I don't want to do infrastructure as a service. We've learned about that. I'm going to go to web apps, okay? So I'm going to say new web. I can make a web app. I can make an API app. We'll learn about those things in a little bit. There's also something called app service environment, which is kind of like your own condo. It's your own private personal space. So that you don't have to hang out with the rank and file. App service environment is for people who want the control of a cloud that is on premises, but they also like the idea of a cloud that is managed by someone else. A little bit outside of scope of what we're talking about, but definitely worth checking out. It's your own personal virtual network, and it lets you scale a little bit greater. If I could say web app, but I'm going to say marketplace, and now I'm going to see a whole series of choices around platform as a service type stuff. So I can go and say, like, for example, Umbraco. I could make an Umbraco CMS or make WordPress. I think there's a small little sample around here somewhere of like a bakery or something basic that I can do. There we go. Do a bakery. That'll take less time. Doing a full CMS might take a few minutes. So I'm going to say create. This is just a little template here. Hey, it is a bakery to delete. Fortunately, no one has ever said that before, so that's awesome. And then I'll pick my MSDN subscription. I can put it in a resource group for AzureCon. Notice here it says pin to start board. I can put that on my main board there, my main dashboard, and we'll hit create. Now, see that? Submitting deployment, deploying the bakery. It's closed all of those blades, and then we're back down here. Now, I can keep doing stuff. I can still explore my virtual machines. I can run around as much as I want while that deployment is happening. It's happening asynchronously. It's happening in the background. See? And it's going to be, I can watch that up here at the top here. The deployment has started. Now, that deployment is happening automatically by virtue of the fact that it came out of the marketplace. I could deploy other stuff as well. For example, while that's happening, I could go over into, say, Visual Studio. All right? And I could say new project, pick an ASP.NET web application, all right? Hit OK. And when I do that, I can go and pick my web app, right? Here's a web app. And I could click host in the cloud right from within Visual Studio and then pick, do I want it running in a virtual machine like we've talked about? And Visual Studio will set up IIS and get everything working. Or as a web app where I don't have to think about the underlying operating system. So I can say web app and then hit OK and then make sure that I'm authenticated here inside of Azure. I think I've got two-factor auth. So I'll just do that real quick. I like to keep it 100 around here and use the two-factor auth. So I'm going to do that. While I'm doing that, let me see. The bakery is just about done. There we go. 139. Cool. Once you've told Visual Studio about your Azure credentials, I can go and make those calls directly from here. This was from Visual Studio. See, it's doing the same kind of thing, checking to see if that was set up. Put it in the same Azure plan, database or not. Hit OK. It's going to go and create that project inside of Visual Studio. Let's go back and see how our bakery is doing. Oh, our bakery is up. Let's run it and see how it's doing. So here, this is under the free pricing tier. You've got free and you've got shared and you've got basic. And there you go. Look at that. So there is a website in the cloud. This one was made from within the Azure portal. It was deployed from the marketplace, not from Visual Studio. If we go back over into Visual Studio, this one is just a Hello World application. I can right click and say publish. See, Azure Web Apps, already an option here. I could also do API apps for web APIs and things like that. Everything should be already set up. We've made an application already in the cloud. This is calling the same APIs that all the other management tools. Oh, there it is. It's actually already publishing. Pardon me. So we come down here. Look, it made it already. Let's go and see that, in fact. Oh, publish it now. So it created it. If I hit publish now, everything already filled out. See? It's already set up. We'll hit publish. So you have a lot of choices. You can maintain and manage Azure from within the portal, if you want, or from within Visual Studio itself. So I come over here to the Server Explorer or in the Cloud Explorer and look at Azure. We'll see all the resource types. This is going to make that call. See virtual machines. We'll see if it can find mine. Oh, there we go. It's deployed. This is going to bring up that Hello World application. So we're doing two things at once here. This is kind of nice. You don't have to sit around and wait. You can actually deploy multiple things in Azure. Here is the Hello World that we just did from Visual Studio. All right. There's my Linux farm. I'm inside of Visual Studio right now. I can right click and open in the portal and I can go and explore those. Web apps can also be managed from within as well. Here, hey, it's a bakery to delete. There it is. See that? From here, I can do things like attach to debugger. I can stop that, open in the portal, explore. Totally up to me. What makes this possible? Why am I able to do stuff in the portal and do stuff inside of Visual Studio? It's because there is a back-end system that is going to have a web API that allows us to do all those things. And the way I like to illustrate that is I go out to the command prompt, and I like to use the Azure command line. There's two Azure command lines, in fact. There's the PowerShell command line tools. Those are great if you like PowerShell. And then there's the what they call the xplat, or cross-platform command line tools. They're written in Node, and you would type npm install -g azure-cli to go and get those if you wanted to. And that gives you this thing called Azure. It's got ASCII art, which is awesome. And I can say Azure noun verb. So Azure site list, Azure VM create. I'm going to say Azure site list. That's going to go and make a call up to the back end. And that list right there, this is the same list that we see in the portal. What's behind that, though? Well, here's a little trick. Say Azure site list, say dash dash JSON. And this is going to show you a little bit of an insight into what's really going on in the background. Oh, look how that shot by like that. Let's just take a look at here. Here's a one that's running in standard. You can see the location of where it lives in production. It's inside of my default server farm. Different enabled host names. You get a lot of internal information about what's going on by saying dash dash JSON. Now, remember those websites that I made. I said, hey, it's a bakery to delete. I can be here in the portal and click delete. Do it from there. Or I could say, delete. And now that site's going away. And I think I made another one that was called Visual Studio. There's all sorts of places in the Azure portal where you can go and search. You don't need to just click around and browse. Use the search boxes. That is a really important tip. Some people find this overwhelming, but if you use the search boxes, you'll go exactly where you want to go. This was from Visual Studio. Hit delete. And now I'm going to remove that one. I want to point out again, I could do it from the portal. I can do it from the command line. I can do it from Visual Studio, so I can manage all of these things. And because it's in the free pricing tier, I can have 10 of those. I can play, and I don't have to worry about that costing me anything. But an even more interesting way to potentially deploy something that might be more realistic is to do it as a Git deployment, a source control deployment. Okay? So let's try doing that. So Corey gave me a website called All-in-One. That is a really great example. Let's go and find that. So I'm going to go out to the command line, and we'll go way over here. So here's a website, and it's just got a bunch of different little hello worlds and stuff like that. So what we're going to try to do is we're going to use the command line, and we're going to say Azure site create dash location West US, and we'll say the name of this is going to be AzureCon All-in-One dash dash Git. See if that works. I think it's dash dash location, in fact. Okay. Executing command site create. It's going to get the locations, and the location I'm going to put it in is the West US. Creating a new website. I could certainly do that from here. Go and say new web app, or I could do that from Visual Studio. It's going to ask me for a publishing username. And here's the nice little feature, dash dash Git. Not only ran Git init, but it also set up a remote for me. So now if I said, I think it's Git remote show, you see that there is a remote called Azure. That means that there's a place waiting for me up in Azure somewhere. Let's go and see where that is. We named it AzureCon All-in-One. So let's go look at our web apps. Here's AzureCon All-in-One. It's sitting right there. It already is existing. And I'm going to scroll down just a little bit and look for deployment. Deployment is loading right now. We have not deployed anything. All we did was we made a place for it. It is just sitting there. If we actually hit that site, you should see a, hey, here's a website, congratulations, there's nothing here, right? You can FTP it, you can do whatever makes you happy, okay? But what we're gonna do is a little more awesome. It says no deployment found. Okay, we've deployed nothing. So we're gonna go and say, Git add, blah, everything. Git commit, this is the first one. Git push, then the name of the remote, Azure, and then the master, which is the current branch that we care about right now. And then we'll put in the password, and we're going to send that up there. So this is pushing up to Azure. This is happening locally. But in a moment, you're going to see it say remote colon, and that's going to be information that we're getting back from Azure. Azure now is going to take over that work and start to do what it needs to do to prepare. There it is. See, this is remote. So we've just pushed that up into Git. Azure is going to get that application running and working, and it's going to use a thing called Kudu, K-U-D-U. That's the open source system that Azure uses to manage websites and deploy websites. So it's just copied all of that. It says deployment successful, and now it's up and running. So now let's go back, close a few things. So this was the AzureCon All-in-One. We'll hit refresh, and theoretically something will happen. The very first time that it will start up will be a little bit slower than the second. There it is. Hello, all worlds. So what's fun about this particular Azure website and why I like to use it so much is that it's not only a static file. It is also classic ASP, because why not? Seriously, why not? ASP.NET, Razor, Node.js, PHP, and a web API, all running in the same website in Azure. It shows you that this can all be managed in one place. You can run not just .NET. A lot of people sometimes think that Azure is the .NET cloud. It's not. In fact, a whole lot of Azure is Linux. A lot of Azure is PHP. There's a lot of great stuff that you can do up here. What's nice with this example is that it's all happening in the exact same website. So if we switch back over here and look at deployments, so look at that. That's interesting. See, it says reason, skewer you. I think I was trying to be silly. Where did that text come from? Let's go back and find out. I'm going to say git log. Oh, look at that. There's a bad guy. So someone's clearly been fired, and we're going to have to do something about them. This is a really interesting aspect of Azure. Let's try this here. If someone tries to deface your website, let's go and make a change. We'll change the hello.php, for example. I can do that in Notepad. You know, I'm not going to do that in Notepad, because only punks do that in Notepad. I'm going to use Visual Studio Code, which is way awesomer. And I'm going to go in here, and we'll say, hello, world. This is a new commit. All right. I'll go back out here, and I'll say git add, git commit, fired that guy. Git push Azure master. And then we'll say push that. I'm going to hop back over here and see if we can see that. Oh, that's kind of cool too. So one of the things that just popped up, if you saw that for just a very brief moment on the Azure portal, was the portal itself just got updated while I've been running it. This happens sometimes. If you use Azure for a long time, you're inevitably going to pop into this. This is kind of cool. They are on a Scrum basis. They're updating the Azure portal on a regular basis. So one of the things that happens sometimes is the portal itself will get updates. So you'll get the new stuff, which is really cool. So something just got updated. Fortunately, though, it's going to drop me right back where I was left off, which is pretty sweet. So we're back into our web app, and I want to point out the breadcrumbs at the top here. So we're in the deployment details for the AzureCon all-in-one. Look, see that? Fired that guy. What we can do, in fact, is if a bad guy potentially wanted to hurt me, maybe a disgruntled employee, let's say, for example, I can go and see the exact logs of when they did that, and then I can redeploy. I can say, nope, I want to redeploy that, put that back the way it was. It's using source control as a way to deploy your web applications. This is really nice. So there, here we go. Now you see the website is starting to get requests. And I can go in here and control its scale and its pricing. So that's where things start getting really, really interesting. You can scale these up or out. Let's talk about out first. I can go here and say, well, I want n number of instances. Right now, we've just got the one instance on this particular application. But I might want to, I might want to have more than one. I'm going to scale those potentially out. So that's not loading right now. Let me try pricing tier. Right now, I believe this is running free or shared. Yeah, here we go. So I'm on free, right? If I wanted to, I can scale up, right? So I could go up to a premium or a burial. Like, here's a basic. Now, this is a confusing aspect, I must say, of Azure, and this confused me a little bit. If I click there and I say, well, I'm going to go from free to, at the time of this, the time that I'm talking to you, you know, an estimated $30 a month, I might say, oh, gosh, I don't really want to pay $30 for this one website. But what you're really paying for is an application service plan. And you can put multiple websites inside of one of those. So let me give you an example. Let me step away from this. And I want to show you. These are real websites. This is like real stuff. So for example, here is a real web app for one of our podcasts that I'm running in Azure. You can see it's a real website. It has real people visiting it. We had, looks like 800 and something requests today. And that's running inside of a small instance. I can click on the pricing tier and go and look at that. I'm running in an S1, okay? So this cost me personally an estimated $44 a month, at the time of this pricing. But I have got a full core and almost 2 gigs of RAM and 50 gigs of storage. And I can have up to 10 instances using auto scale and things like that. I get backup. I get all this great stuff. But it's not just this one website, okay? Let's go and look at that application service plan, and I'll show you how much is running in it. And this really makes me happy. So here's my app service plan. Look at this. I'm running 18 websites inside that small. This one's running two. Azure Con is running two. So I click on this server farm. Okay. Oops. This is the application service plan. This is part of Azure App Service. You can see I'm using basically no file system. I could definitely do that more. My CPU is quite low. My memory percentage is 65%. So of that 2 gigs or 1.75 gigs that you get with an S1, you can see how that comes and goes and grows and shrinks. This is a very healthy instance. And I've even gone and set up my own alerts. I've got custom metrics here. Because I'm running 18 websites in one small, I want to know if the memory gets too high. If the memory goes over 90%, then I'm going to get a text message. In this sense, I've set it up as an email, and then I have it set up as a text. Here, I've also got if the CPU percentage ever stays over 90%. These are things I care about. If there is maybe a long HTTP queue, I want to know about it. Here's the best part, though. I can put as many web applications inside this small as I can fit, as many as will make me happy. And then if I want to, I can scale them out so I could have 1, 2, 3, 10 smalls. Or I could scale them up. I could say, well, I want this small to become a medium. So you've got a lot of different choices, and sometimes it can be overwhelming. But I wanted to point out that these are 18 small production websites. These are not the most complicated websites in the world. They're my podcast. They are some video games that I work on the side and things like that. But I don't have to think about the underlying operating system. I don't have to think about that virtual machine. That's just handled for me, which makes me very, very happy. But I still want control, okay? This is going to get a little more advanced. Remember when I talked about what that thing was called Kudu? When you're thinking about Azure, you've got those websites that float above virtual machines. There is still a virtual machine there. It's just not one that you get to really think about. You get to think about its size. You get to think about if there's more than one of them and how it scales out. But for the most part, it's handled for you. Let's take a look at one of these web apps. Let's look. I think I have one called, here it is, Logging Test. This is one that I use sometimes. I can click on that web app. I can pin it. I can right-click and pin any of its monitoring things. I can have a whole dashboard that explains these things. But how do I really see what's happening inside it? Okay, what's really going on? Well, there's a tools menu now, and this is awesome. There's a logging stream inside of the Azure portal itself. Let's click on the log stream. Okay, so we're going to go and attach to that log stream. And while that's happening, I'm going to go and hit loggingtest.azurewebsites. See, I'm going to actually pull that off into its own window and hit refresh. You notice that as I hit refresh, those logs are appearing inside of that application log right there. That's inside of Azure itself. Look at that. See, there's the IIS logs themselves. You can see me calling for a jQuery bundle. But I can also come out to the command line. Okay, I want to point this out. I got a lot going on here. We've got a DOS prompt or a command line. We've got a website, and we've got the Azure portal. So I'm going to say Azure site, remember, Azure noun verb, Azure site log tail, and then the name of my application is logging test. So we'll say Azure site log tail, and then I'll hit refresh a couple of times. And that's connected there. So that logging service is being seen from all over. Remember, I could go into Visual Studio. Well, why don't we go into Visual Studio? There's logging test. It is a website. Here are the files on disk of what is involved there. I can right click and I can say attach debugger if I wanted to. But what if I said view streaming logs, right? Let's go look at the output. Bring that back up again, hit refresh. So I want you to understand that you can do this whatever way makes you happy. Logs from the command line, logs from the browser, logs from Visual Studio. You can see what's going on inside of your application. There's nothing here that is a black box. So looking back in the portal here for logging tests, I can click on tools. You saw where I picked log stream. Check this out. Process Explorer. I love this stuff. I like this because it makes me feel like I have control of the virtual machine, but I still have to worry about the virtual machine. This is the whole idea about Rent a Puppy. I'm telling you, it's going to be huge. Rentapuppy.com. I'm going to make the website. I'm going to make millions. Check this out. These are the processes that are running within this website on this virtual machine that I don't have control of. And this is what I think is really great. I can click on these and get insights. I can see what version of this is. It's kind of a silly thing for me to focus on, but I want you to be reminded that there is really a computer that's running your website with a real C drive and a real D drive. And those processes have IDs. They have PIDs. You can go and see what are the modules inside of those. Like specifically, what is that DLL and what is the version and how is it working inside of your application? These are important things to remember because a lot of people assume that a website is a black box and they just aren't. You have the control to see what's going on in your application and you have the control to make changes. So Process Explorer is one way. But remember, we talked about Kudu. Check this out. Every Azure website has a, for lack of a better word, a sidecar website. If I click on Kudu and go and look at the Kudu site for my particular application, this is the site that deploys the site. Okay? So we were looking at logging test. Now we're going to look at the Kudu site for logging test. There we go. So notice the URL. It's the same URL as before, except we've added source control management, SCM, in between there. And that's where Kudu lives. Within this application, you can see all sorts of stuff, mini dumps, files. You can have a tiny debug console. Check this out. This is actually a little tiny command line, but it's not real. It's done in HTML. But it allows you to run around in there and see, well, gosh, can I see inside my site and look at my www root and see what those files are? Look at the views. I can actually edit the web config from here. I certainly wouldn't recommend that you do that. But I can go out from the command line and modify and control my application from here. So there's running like PS. I could even theoretically run Notepad. What do you think happened there? I ran Notepad. What's it doing? I didn't see anything pop up. Because it's running in Azure somewhere. And nope, it's already been cleaned up. So Notepad is gone. But for a moment, it was running, and then Azure said, nah, there's no reason for that to be running. There's that W3WP. I can see the PID for that application. So Kudu lets you explore and ask questions of your website that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to ask. This isn't required to be a successful Azure programmer. This isn't even required to know or understand. But for you to have one additional layer of abstraction and just go underneath and go, well, what exactly is this running on top of? Oh, there are virtual machines underneath Azure websites is a really, really useful skill to be able to do. And actually, just before I joined you, Corey showed me something even cooler that I didn't know about. And it's not every day that I learn something new like this. And hopefully, I will get it right. That little command line there, the ability to go and say debug console and poke around inside of your application, there is in fact an application called Kudu that you can get with npm. It's npm install-g, and it is, what is it, Corey? Kudu? Kudu exec. So what this is going to let me do, Kudu https loggingtest.scm.azurewebsites.net, Kudu exec, pardon me. This is your deployment username. This is the one you use for your Git deployment because what it's really doing, look at that. That's not really my D drive. This is inside of Azure right now. And what's great about this is it's kind of an illusion, right? We're not quite SSHing into this, but we are going over secure sockets. We can go and look at our application logs and explore this from a pseudo kind of command line, which is pretty amazing. Look at that. And there's my application logs. Right there. Your choice, the way that makes you happy. And they even loved this so much that they added that console directly into the Azure portal itself. So I can come out to the Azure portal and run these commands myself. Again, you never need to see this, which I think is kind of one of the brilliant aspects of how this works. You could just spend that time looking at your performance monitoring and things like that from the portal itself. And if there are particular pieces of information that you want, pin them, right? Take this here, right-click, pin to start board, right? Let's go back to the start board. And now I've got the logging test requests pinned there. I can then right-click, hit customize, maybe make it a little smaller. I might have a whole series of websites that I want to put there. Lay this out however makes me happy. If you've got a 30-inch monitor, it looks particularly nice. So this level of flexibility is offered by using web apps, which is what we call platform as a service. And I can scale those up, and I can scale them out. The last thing I wanted to show you was a little bit about a global scale. I like to use a thing called Traffic Manager. Now, I've got a little application that I do on the side. It's a little startup. It's called My Echo. It lets me connect my iPhone to my Windows PC. And because I wanted to take this to a global audience, I needed to have these websites running in more than one location. I needed them running all over the world because I wanted it to work well for everyone everywhere. So I went and I did Git deployments to not just North Central US, but also Southeast Asia, because I wanted to hit Australia and everyone over in Southeast Asia. I wanted to make sure it worked well in Japan and China, West Europe as well. Now I've got a hub that takes care of the dictation. So the application basically takes dictation from your phone, runs it through the cloud, and drops it into Windows. And of course, that's something that has to happen quickly, so you want to have low latency. There's a hub using event hubs and other Azure features that does that. So if you, and you can try this at home if you'd like, just for a moment, just hit hub.myechoapp.com. You'll see that I got North Central US because that's near where we are. But here's a little trick for you. I've got another machine, a virtual machine, back to VMs here, that's running in West Europe because I need to be able to test that this stuff works. I'm using a thing called Traffic Manager. And Traffic Manager does global load balancing, not just round-robin load balancing, but global load balancing. And when you hit hub.myechoapp.com, in fact, that doesn't go directly to my web app. It goes to Traffic Manager. Traffic Manager then makes a smart decision about where you are in the world and then picks the web application that it thinks is nearest you. So I made a virtual machine. This is just a Windows 7 Enterprise virtual machine. I just stuck it over in West Europe. This allows me to go and make sure that my Traffic Manager is working. You should try this. So check it out. If I go here and hit hub.myechoapp.com, it shows up in West Europe. So that's proof that this is, in fact, working. And the nice thing about Traffic Manager is that if something went wrong or if my web application went down, I can pull that out of the Traffic Manager, and that will be routed then to the nearest hub. When I was in Japan, I was showing this to some Japanese people, and I deployed a brand new hub in Japan, West Japan specifically, custom for the folks in Tokyo, added it to the hub. About 5 minutes later, it showed up and it said West Japan. That means that myself and my partner Greg, our little startup, can scale globally using Azure web apps, and we really didn't have to do much of anything. This virtual machine that I'm running in West Europe for testing, well, I can just go and hit stop now, shut that down, and when that virtual machine is no longer running, when that's been deallocated, then I just pay for the storage of its disk, and I don't actually have to pay for the virtual machine itself, which is another really nice nice feature, especially when you're a little tiny company. I say company in quotes there. My buddy Greg and I trying to make our little startup. One other thing, when we think about layering within Azure, we'll go back to the slides here. You know, you've got your virtual machines, you've got websites. On top of that, as part of Azure Application Service, there's websites, there's mobile apps, or web apps and mobile apps, rather. I'll change that, in fact. You've got web apps, you've got mobile apps, you've got a thing called Logic Apps, which allow you to do almost kind of biz talk in the cloud, you know, persistent workflows, enterprise level transactional workflows in the cloud. But then you've also got API applications. So if you're going to be doing something with an API, like I'm doing with my mobile application, those are going to live at another layer of abstraction. We made one of those. We made a web API that we called, that actually Brady Gaster made. Let's go over and grab that. Actually, I think we called it Azure Cards. So let's go and browse all. Go all resources, Azure Cards. There it is right there. Again, see, look at me using search as I'm supposed to. So we'll click on Azure Cards. And Azure Cards, oops, there we go, is a API app that is like a web app, but it has this gateway in between us and the outside world. So I can do really nice things like have it be public and anonymous right now. So for example, if we go and hit this API, this is a cool API that Brady made that lets you shuffle a deck of cards, basically. So here's the application that's going to then talk Angular and talk JSON. We're going to go and shuffle a deck of cards and then deal them out. The APIs handling all of that work, I can then shuffle those and deal them out again. See, we're getting, and that's actually the icon for a mobile app and a logic app. This uses an underlying technology that is called Swagger. It's kind of like WSDL, except with curly braces. It's WSDL for RESTful APIs. So this API that we're calling, this card API, you can see the Swagger for it. That's the JSON for the Swagger. This is a description of that API. That's too hard to look at. Let's take a look at it in a better way. Let's look at the UI for Swagger, and this is using this great open source application called Swashbuckle, which lets us explore that API. So you can see the API has a post to do a new deck of cards, a get that can shuffle and then deal out X number of cards. So when you have that Swagger, it will go and generate this nice UI for you. And it turns out that Azure speaks this by default, right? This is built into an understanding in Azure. So if I go back here and look at the API application, you see the API definition, that description language, the Azure portal understands. Because it understands that, it means that we can do other more interesting things, like with API management, where we could say, well, you know, new and shuffle are something that people who are trial users can do, or maybe deal is only for our gold members, or we can say, well, too many people are hitting from this IP address. We can do all kinds of gateway level things. We could also lock it down from an authentication perspective, right? I could go here into identity and say, this is something that only Twitter people can use, or we're going to have to need you to log into Facebook before you use that particular application. You've got a lot more flexibility. So let's roll it all the way back to that original discussion where there's VMs, right? It's all about the virtual machines. VMs have disk, they have IOPS, they live inside of Azure Storage. As you go up the stack closer to the business person, that's why we go up the stack, because we are in this to, you know, to make stuff, to make business things. Websites, above that, API apps, mobile apps, logic apps, higher level business level things. Being able to ask a question like, well, I want to make sure that the only people who can use this API are ones that are subscribers that have authenticated with Twitter. That's a business requirement. I don't really want to be messing around at the virtual machine level, dealing with keeping those things updated. At least not all the time. Maybe I will use those for applications that I require that level of control. So the thing that I want you to take away from this kind of developer overview of Azure is that there's a lot of exciting stuff in Azure. There's a lot of pieces here, but you can pick the ones that make you happy. There are web apps and API apps, API management up at the top level there, hubs, notification hubs to send down toast into someone's mobile phone. There's analytics and all sorts of big data that you can do. We've got data from SQL Server. We've got Hadoop. We've got DocumentDB and things like that. We've even got Redis as a service. You don't have to use all of this. You don't have to be overwhelmed by all of this. Just use the pieces that make you happy. But remember that they all plug in together. They all work together. And frankly, I wouldn't work on it if I wasn't having fun. I enjoy working on this stuff. I hope that you've enjoyed this reasonably brief 1 hour overview of Azure and how I use Azure and Azure for developers. And I encourage you to explore some of the other videos that we've got both at azure.com and at Channel 9. And I thank you very much.